Boa noite a todos. Que delícia, que gostoso estar aqui mais uma noite. Mais um speech, mais uma oportunidade. Depois, eu não sei quem teve a oportunidade de acompanhar o Rabino desde sexta à noite, mas realmente está sendo espetacular, uma energia fantástica, impressionante a energia que esse Rabino tem para conseguir inspirar a gente agora na véspera dos Yamim Noraim. Eu vou insistir o que eu falei ontem, eu já falei diversas vezes e eu vou insistir mais uma vez. Eu peço a gentileza de todos tentarem focar 100% no Rabino e prestar atenção em cada palavra, porque Bemet é uma oportunidade única e a gente tem que sugar tudo que a gente pode de uma pessoa tão especial que nem o Rav Pesach Crown, para que a gente consiga se elevar e se conectar com a Kadosh Baruch Hu nessa véspera dos Yamim Noraim. Eu espero que todos tenham uma noite maravilhosa e aproveitem cada momento. Obrigado. Rav Pesach Crown, Vakashá.
It is such a great thrill and an honor for me to have been invited by somebody that I feel is like a brother to me, Shlomo Safra and his wife Mariana. We spent a wonderful, wonderful Shabbos together. I am just so overwhelmed by the Beit Yaakov community. I prayed with the young men and women Friday night, 300 of them. I never saw a tefillah like that. And then Shabbat, we came to this crowd, just amazing. And then again, Shalashudis, and last night by David Dayan. And today I was also by another woman that's like a sister to me, Ariella Landau, and her husband Chaim. We're related, and we spent a whole day in Yardins. So the community is so special. I'm so honored to be here, and I hope that we'll be able to be inspired together. We've come together at a very, very special time in the Jewish year. And that, of course, is in the month of Elul. And we all know that the Chazal, the rabbis teach us that Elul stands for Ani L'doidi V'doidi Li. I am to my friend, and my friend is to me. And Rav Elia Lapian explained, just as I am dedicated to Hashem, my friend, Hashem, in turn, will be dedicated to my needs, to me. Ani L'doidi V'doidi Li. But the Baba V'Rebbe said something very interesting about the word Elul. He said, Elul, what it stands for, is Echad L'Oila V'Echad L'Chatos. Oila means to go up. Chatos means one who does a sin. We know Oila and Chatos are names of different sacrifices, different karbonas. And the Rebbe explained as follows. There are some people that look back at the previous year and they say, I learned Torah, I did tzedakah, I davened with a minyan, I was nice to people, I had a good year. So we say to those people, that's wonderful, but you can't rest on your laurels. You can't just say you're going to be at that madrega, echad la'oila. You have to be better. You were great last year, that's wonderful. This year, you'll be even higher. More tzedakah, more tefillah, more Torah, more ben adam l'chavero. That's what we say, echad l'oila. But then there are those people like most of us that look back at the previous year and we think and we say, you know something? Maybe I didn't learn as much as I should have. Maybe I didn't daven as slow as I should have. Maybe I didn't give enough tzedakah. Maybe I wasn't as kind to people as I should have been. So that's echad l'chatas. That's somebody who looks back at the previous year and feels that maybe he did some sins. But either way, echad l'oila v'echad l'chatas, these days are days of elevation. And that's what we come to talk about tonight. How can we elevate our lives in these days of Elul and these days of Aseret Yemei Tshuva, until we come to Yom Kippur and to Hoshana Rabbah? So I want to tell you something very, very interesting. Many of you know that I am a Mohel. I've been doing it for many, many years. And of course, one of the things that I always try to help people is to choose the proper name for their child. That's one of the most important decisions that parents make, because the Gemara tells us, Shemo Gorim, your name has an influence. If you would know the meaning of your name and the letters of your name and the gematria, the numerical value of your name, you would understand what your life is all about. So let's watch something very interesting. We know that the first one who had a Brit Milah was Avraham Avinu. And Hashem says to Avraham Avinu in Bereishis Yud Zayin Pasukei, V'lo yikorei oid eshimcha Avram. Your name will no longer be Avram. V'hoya shimcha Avraham. I'm going to add a letter to your name, and that is the letter He. So now, from now on, Ki av hamoin goyim nisaticha, because now you are the father of a multitude of nations, you have a different role. Fine. So Hashem changed Abraham's name by adding the letter He. But let's watch something interesting. A few psukim later, Hashem says to Abraham, Sarai ishtecha, your wife Sarai, lo tikra eshimo Sarai. Her name will no longer be Sarai, ki Sarah Shema. Her name will be Sarah. I'm going to add a hey to her name. And she will not any longer be known as Sarai, but Sarah. So I was thinking, Hashem, you got 22 letters in the Jewish alphabet. You already used the hey for Abraham. You couldn't find another letter for Sarah. There's so many other letters to use. Why did Hashem choose the letter hey for Abraham and for Sarah? So I'll tell you what I think. You know, there's a fascinating Gemara. The Gemara tells us in Menaches, Daf Chof Tes Amud Beis, that the world was created like the letter hey. I want you to take a look at it. I hope that you could all see it. The letter hey. Now, what does that mean? That Hashem created the world like the letter hey. So there are two understandings. One understanding is, you see, when you pronounce any letter in the Jewish alphabet, you need different parts of your mouth, your tongue, your teeth. For example, let's say you want to say the letter shin. If you don't have teeth, you can't say shin. And if you want to say the letter mem, you don't have lips, you're not saying mem. You got to have lips to say mem. And heaven help you, if you're a Sephardi and you're trying to say chet, right? And you don't got throat muscles, you're not saying chet or ayin or aleph. I don't know how they say it. So you need different parts of the mouth and the throat and the tongue for different letters. There's only one letter, you don't need anything. Hey, hey, just breathe it out. So simple. So that's what the Medrash says. It was so simple for Hashem to create the world like the letter, hey, just breathe it out. You don't need a tongue, a mouth, a palate, a throat, nothing. That's one pshat. But the other pshat, and the one that I want to talk about, is what the Gemara tells us. What does it mean that the world was created like the letter hey? You see, there's no floor on the bottom. A person, chas v'shalom, could fall all the way down. There's no end to how far a person could fall if he does aveirot, if he does sins. But every person has to know, you could always come back. This door is open for teshuvah. Hey is the letter of teshuvah to show us, no matter what you did the past year, no matter where you went, no matter what you watched, no matter what you said, you can always come back. Hey is the letter of teshuvah, and that's why Hashem had to give Abraham and Sarah the letter hey. Because Abraham Avinu was the father of all the men who did teshuvah, and Sarah was the woman, the mother of all the women who did teshuvah. So they had to get the letter hey. Because hey represents teshuvah, this door is always open. Now, let's see an amazing thing. Hey is equal 5. I'm going to tell you now something that the Torah writes, and you would think a Hasidish Rebbe said it. But watch something amazing. What is the fifth bracha, number 5, in Shimon Esrei that we say every day? Hashiveinu, Avinu, L'Sayr Asecha. That's the bracha of tshuva. And you know what the Torah says? Hashiveinu begins with a hey. How does it end? Harotze b'tshuva. It ends with a hey. Whoops. 5 and 5 is 10. That's the Aseret Yemei Tshuva. That's what the letter hey is all about. So tonight, no matter whether we're Echad La'ayla or Echad L'chatas, we're walking into this door. Tonight, we're here to do tshuva, to become better, to elevate ourselves. That's what the letter hey is all about. So how are we going to do that? So I'll tell you something amazing. I think that if we can only bring out the best in ourselves, every waking moment, be the best that we could be, that's how we could make Hashem proud of us. And that's how we can fulfill our role as Yidden in this world. So I want to share with you something fascinating. There is a very interesting Zohar HaKadosh. The Zohar Chodosh writes in Shir HaShirim that the word Yisrael, Yud, Shin, Resh, Aleph, Lamed, you know what it stands for? Yesh, Shishim, Riboy, Oisiyos, La Torah. There are 600,000 letters in the Torah. Why 600,000? Because there were 600,000 men that left Mitzrayim. There were millions of Jews that left Mitzrayim if you count the women and the children. But every man who left Mitzrayim had a letter that was his. 600,000 men, 600,000 letters in the Torah. That means that all of us, every one of us here tonight, who is a descendant of those 600,000, we have a letter that is ours. We are one big collective Sefer Torah. And if that's the case, I believe there's 3 very important lessons that we can learn. The first one, what happens if on Shabbat the Baal Korah is reading and all of a sudden he sees one letter is missing? It's not there. If there's hundreds of thousands of letters that are there and perfect, one letter is missing, what do? You got to close the Sefer Torah, put a gartel around it, bring it into the Aron Kodesh, take out a new one. Because if one letter is missing, the whole Sefer Torah is flawed. The whole Sefer Torah is pasul. To me, that means that if there's one Jew out there, whether he's in Chile, in Mexico, in Brazil, Argentina, in Florida, in Williamsburg, no matter what, one Jew who's not fulfilling his role as a Jew, it's a question on all of us. Kiruv is not only for Beit Yaakov. Kiruv is not only for Or Sameach and Eish HaTorah and Hashiveinu and JEP and all these wonderful organizations. Every one of us has cousins that are not religious. Every one of us has neighbors that are not religious. Every one of us works with Jews that are not religious. It's our job to make sure that every Jew fulfills his role and becomes the best Jew that they can be. Because if there's one Jew out there who's missing what he is supposed to do as a Erlich Hayid, as a true Jew, then that's like a letter that's missing in the Sefer Torah, and it's a question on all of us. The second lesson. In the Torah, there are no two letters that can touch each other, that overlap. Every letter is special. That means every person who has a letter in the Torah, all of us, is special. Every one of us has a role to play in this world. Every one of us can be great. No two people overlap. You come to a big kehillah, you see 1,000 people. You go to Yerushalayim, you go to New York, California, Chicago, whatever. A person could think, well, Hashem, you don't need me. You got all these Jews. No, no, no. No two Jews overlap. Everyone, Hashem needs every single one. It's interesting. It's interesting, right? That the third lesson to me is that you can't do it alone. In English, you have words. I don't know how it works in Portuguese, but in English, you have words that are one letter. I go, I do, I think. A book, a microphone, a stender. In Portuguese, do you have words that are one letter? I don't know. But in the Torah, there's not one word that has only one letter. I know some people are going to say, Halashem tikmul luzais, but it's not really a word. What does that mean that you can't do it alone? Everyone is important. Everyone can be great. Everyone can accomplish, but you can't do it alone. Those are the three lessons. The three lessons are, one, if there's one Jew out there that's not fulfilling his role, then it's a question on all of us. Two, no Jew overlaps because each one is special. And as special as we are, we have to know that we can't do it alone. Now, I want to tell you something that happened to me a couple years ago. It inspired me in such an amazing way. And I want to tell every single man, woman, and child in this Beis Medrash tonight, think about yourself as I say this thing that somebody told me, and you will see how important you are. Somebody told me on my birthday a few years ago, now I have the best birthday in the world because everybody celebrates my birthday. My birthday is Tu B'Shvat. Everybody's happy on my birthday. So now, on my birthday, somebody called me and said, you know, the day you were born years ago, that's the day that Hashem decided the world can no longer exist without you. Think about that. Every person here, think about that. The day you were born, that's when Hashem decided the world can no longer exist without you. Hashem needs you. Hashem needs every single one of us. Now, I want to tell you an amazing thing. There was a very famous lady, a Rebbetzin, in New York. She just passed away 2 or 3 years ago. Some of you certainly heard of her. Her name was Rebbetzin Esther Youngreis. She was a very, very famous speaker, and she spoke in the White House. She spoke for the Israeli soldiers. She had the Hineni organization. And in the last years of her life, I had the opportunity to get to know her quite well, because many times we were on the same program where we both spoke in South Africa, in Gateways, many, many different places, Neshed Cares, different places. And she once told me that as public as she was, her husband, Rab Meshulam Youngreis, was so quiet and private, but she always relied on him. And everything that she did, it was only after she consulted with him and he gave her advice of what to do. And she told me that when he died, she thought her life is over. How could she go on without her husband? She always got his advice. She always asked him what to do. And even though she was public and the world heard about her and they didn't really know about Rabbi Meshulam Youngreis, she was devastated. And she didn't know how she could go on. A few weeks after he passed away, her daughter, who I just found out 20 minutes ago, is married to a Brazilian fellow, right, Wolf. So Slavi Wolf, her daughter, found an index card, a little card, in one of Rab Meshulam Youngreis's svarim. And she read the card, and she ran to her mother, and she said, Ma, look. Look what Abba wrote. And I want to read it to you, and I'm going to read it to you twice. This is what he wrote. A long life is not good enough, but a good life is long enough. A long life is not good enough, but a good life is long enough. And she told me that when she saw that, she realized that her husband wrote it so that she should see it, and she should be able to go on with life. Just because somebody lives 80, 90, or 100 years old and they accomplish nothing, that's not good enough. What's good enough is when you accomplish every day. A good life is long enough. And that's why she was able to understand that her husband had a good life. And for whatever reason, Hashem decided That's how long he should live. But that she could go on with life, because a long life is not good enough, but a good life is long enough, and she has to make every day count. And then she wrote a book, and the book is called Life is a Test. And in there she wrote, the goodness cannot be measured by the length of our years, but how we live those years. The goodness is not about what we amass, but what we give. It's not about having more, but being more. For in the end, our lives are judged, not by the businesses or the houses or the portfolios we build, but by the lives we touched and made better. I want to show you something so amazing. Many of us know that the Sfas Emes was the second of the Ger Rebbes. The first one was the Chedushi Arim. Tragically, the Sfas Emes lived to be only 58 years old. And at his funeral, there was an amazing conversation that took place. His grandson, the Imre Emes, spoke to his younger brother and said, at least our father had Arichas Yomim. So the brother said, Arichas Yomim? Arichas Yomim means length of days. He didn't live long. He only lived to be 58. Listen to what the Imre Emes said. He was going to be the third Rebbe. He said, I didn't say that he had Arichas Shonim. I said that he had Arichas Yomim. Arichas Shonim means length of years. No one in this universe can guarantee for themselves Arichas Shonim. That's only Hashem decides how long every person lives. But every single one of us can guarantee in our lives Arichas Yomim, length of days, making every day count. And that's what the Imre Emes said about the Sfas Emes. It's true, he didn't live Arichas Shonim, but he lived Arichas Yomim. And that's what we have to try to accomplish, to have Arichas Yomim. Arichas Shonim is what Hashem gives us. Arichas Yomim is what we give Hashem, making every day count. And that's what he said about the Sfas Emes. He may have lived only 58 years, but every day counted. And you know how you do it? Rabbi Yerucham Levovitz, the Mashgiach of Mir, once said, and this is so important to know in Elul, as important as it is to know our faults, to know what we have to fix, it's even more important to know our virtues and our milas, to know what we could accomplish. Many times the Yetzer Hara says to a person, oh, you're so bad, it's no point in doing tshuva. No. Don't worry about the past. Worry what you could do about the future. Take a look at your talents. Take a look at your mindset. Take a look at what the Eibishter gave you, and then do the best with that. So I want to tell you now a story. A tremendous story about a person who brought out his best. And we are going to learn something fabulous from it. Recently, a song was written by somebody who was a great Jewish songwriter. His name is A.B. Rotenberg. He lives in Toronto, and he wrote a song about Zecharia Wallerstein, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, who was very special in Kirov. And the song is called The Butterfly. It is literally impossible to watch and listen to that song the way A.B. Rotenberg and Shulam Lemmer sing it without crying. But there's one line in that song that to me is worth the whole thing. You can fly and you can soar if you'll just only open the door. You can fly and you can soar if you'll just only open the door. And so I want to tell you this great story. And the person who was so great in the story comes in the middle of the story, as you will see in a moment. About 3-4 years ago, I got a call on a Motzei Shabbos, and a young couple is calling, and they say, Rabbi Krohn, we need chizuk. I said, what's wrong? And the woman starts talking, and then soon she started crying and she couldn't continue. But she said to me, I'm expecting a baby in 2 weeks and I'm so afraid. And I said to her, what are you afraid of? That's the most beautiful thing in the world when a woman is able to have a child. And she starts crying and she can't talk. And her husband gets on the phone and he says, Rabbi Krohn, I want you to know that last year my wife was also expecting a child. And we went into the hospital Friday afternoon, And everybody thought everything was going to be perfect. The pregnancy was perfect. And Friday night, the baby was born, a stillborn. A stillborn means the baby was not alive. And the doctors were so shocked. How could such a thing happen? The pregnancy was perfect. Everything was perfect. And we cried a whole night. We cried a whole night. How could such a thing be? And now we're worried that it shouldn't happen again. And that's why we're calling the please, please give us chizuk. We're so afraid it shouldn't happen a second time, chas v'shalom. Now, I am positive that I'm not the only one that they called. I'm sure that they called other people. So I said to them, I want to tell you what to do. I don't want you to tell anybody that I'm telling you this. But I'm telling you, if you do what I say, you will see in 2 weeks the baby's going to be born and it's going to be perfect. They said, what should we do? I said, take out your Tehillim and you should write this down. You'll look it up when you go home. I said, there are two chapters in Tehillim that both of you should say every day for the next 2 weeks. Once a day, each one of you say these two chapters, 127 and 128. Kuf Chav Zayin and Kuf Chav Ches. I told him, open your Tehillim and let's read it together. The Pasuk says in Kuf Chav Zayin Dalet, Kichitzim b'yad gibor, like arrows in the hand of a strong man, Kein b'nei anaurim, that's what children are. You give birth to children here, but then you send them out and they accomplish. That's the same thing with somebody who shoots an arrow. He's here, but the arrow goes far and it accomplishes. The next Pasuk says, Hine nachlas Hashem bonim. The heritage of Hashem is children. And then I said, take a look at Kuf Chav Ches, the next chapter. The next chapter says, Eshtecho kegefen peria. Your wife will be like a fruitful vine. Biarkasei beisecho, in the inner chambers of your house. Bonecho, your children will be kishasile zesim, like olive sprouts. Olives are always fresh. They're always vibrant. Say these two kapitlach tilim every day. 127 and 128. You'll see. The baby's going to be born and everything's going to be fine. 2 weeks later, I get a call on a Matzah Shabbos. And in a second, I recognize the guy's voice and he says, Rabbi Krohn. Well, as soon as he said Rabbi Krohn in that way, you know it was good. He said, Baruch Hashem, we get a mazel tov. I said, what happened? He said, oh, we had a baby girl. And I'm thinking, I'm a moyal. You couldn't have had a boy. But I didn't say it. I didn't say anything to him. But okay. I wished him mazel tov, and I asked him about the baby's name, and I gave him a brocha, and I'm about to hang up the phone. He says, Rabbi Krohn, don't hang up the phone. I want to tell you the second part of the story that I didn't tell you last time. I said, what is that? He said, remember I told you that we cried all night, Friday night, and Shabbos morning. You see, the hospital was in Long Branch, New Jersey. And I knew that down the block there's a shul. So I said to my wife, you know, it's Shabbos morning. I want to go to shul. I want to daven. So she said, okay. And I was crying as I left the hospital. I came into the shul. He said, you won't believe it. He said, picture this. I'm coming from the hospital where a child that I thought was going to be born was not born alive. I come into shul there in the middle of Kriyat HaTorah. They're reading the Torah. And who's getting an aliyah? The famous singer, Yaakov Chweki. And he just had a healthy baby girl. And they gave him an aliyah and everybody is singing Simen Tov or Mazel Tov. And that's what I walk into. And my mouth dropped open. I couldn't believe it. I'm coming from such a tragedy. And now, look at this unbelievable, happy Simon. And he's a wonderful guy. Everybody's happy for him. So I strengthened myself. And I went over to him. And I said Mazel Tov like everybody else. And then they made a big Kiddush. They made a big Kiddush afterwards. And I stayed for the Kiddush. And I went over to Yaakov Chorky and I said, Yaakov, could you just stay after the Kiddush? I would like to ask you, I want to talk to you about something privately. Yaakov Chweki is a wonderful guy. And he said, of course, I'll stay. After the Kiddush, everybody is gone. And this fellow tells me I was there with Yaakov Chweki alone. And I said to him, My wife asked me that I should ask you this favor. We just had a terrible tragedy. We thought we were going to have a healthy baby, and the baby wasn't born alive. And we have to cry. And we need somebody who could cry with us. And we know that you sing a song, Mama Rachel Cry. Could we come to your house? We'll come straight from the hospital. We're not even going to go home. We'll come to you. And just please sing that song for us so we could all cry together and get it out of our system. I just want to read to you one of the chorus lines of that song. Mama Rachel, cry for us again. Won't you shed a tear for your dear children? If you raise your sweet voice now as then, they will come. And he says, Rabbi Krohn, Yaakov Chwek, he said, of course you could come. I'll wait for you even after midnight. Come, we'll sing it together. He said, Rabbi Krohn, we came late at night. Not only did he sing that song for us, he sang that beautiful song, Rachem, Rachem, Hashem, have Rachmanes, that we lost, the Beis HaMikdash. He gave us CDs, and he spent time with us, and he gave us chizuk. It was so incredible. I could not get over the story. Now, at that time, I was making recordings for a certain yeshiva. They send out recordings of Mishnayos, Halacha, Musar, Hashkafa, Gemara, and they wanted I should make recordings about Chesed. So I figured this is a great story to tell, but I can't tell a story about somebody without asking him. So I called Yaakov Chweki, and I said to him, Yaakov, he knew who I was. I said, you know, I just heard this fabulous story about how you sang with that family. It's amazing to me. And I just want to make a recording and tell people what you did. And Yaakov says, Rabbi Krohn, please, please don't tell the story. I said, why not? He said, because you know why I do this? I do this so I should get schar, reward in the Olam HaEmes. I'm afraid if you tell the story, I'm going to get less reward. I said, Yaakov, you're a bigger tzaddik than I thought you were. I said, why do you do it? You do it because singers that are older than you, like Mordechai Ben David, Avram Fried, and Shlomi Dax, they've been doing it for years. They go to hospitals, they go to homes where children are challenged, where parents can't take care of the kids, and they do it. You learn it from them. If I tell the story, people will learn it from you, and you'll get 10 times more reward in the Olam HaEmes, because people will learn from you to do what you did. He said, Rabbi, you really believe that? I said, of course. He said, okay, tell the story. And that's why I'm telling the story. Yaakov Chweki, I don't know how much he makes from a concert. Believe me, it's more than I make from a speech. That's for sure. He makes a fortune, whether he goes to Paris, or to Zurich, or to Israel, or to New York. And he takes this talent, which is worth a fortune, and he gives it to this couple who he never met. Why? Because he's taking the koyach and the virtues and the milas that Hashem gave him, and he's giving it to somebody else. That's how you bring out your best. You take what Hashem gave you, and you're giving it to somebody else. Not for money, but because somebody needs it. That's what it's all about. He flew, and he soared because he opened the door. Because he opened the door to this young couple who was so desperate. And that's what we have to do. Each one of us has talents. I don't have to be like you. You don't have to be like me. And both of us don't have to be like him. Each of us has to be the best that we could be. And each of us is blessed with talents. You might not be a singer or a writer, but there are things that you could do that nobody else could do. And that's what you do, and you give it to other people. And you know something? Never, ever listen to anybody who tells you you can't do something. Even your sister-in-law, even if she tells you you can't do it. And even your brother-in-law who you haven't spoken to in 5 years. Don't listen to anyone. Never, ever be dissuaded. If you believe you can do something, you're going to do it. And I guarantee you, if you believe something that you can do it, you'll never do it. Now, I want to ask a question. I am sure that very, very few people here ever heard of this name, but I'm just curious. I'm going to mention the name of a Goyish fellow who did something very special just by a raise of hands. Did anybody ever hear of the name Roger Bannister? Anybody here ever heard of Roger Bannister? Well, tonight you can look it up online. Roger Bannister was a medical student in England, and he was a great athlete. And in May 6th, 1954, he was the first one since Shashi Mabarashis who ran the mile in less than 4 minutes. He ran the mile in 3:59.4. The only one who probably ever did it was probably Naftali in the Torah, because the Gemara tells us Naftali could run fast. But otherwise, no one ever ran a mile in less than 4 minutes. And the world went crazy. Every newspaper, every sports magazine, no one could believe how could a human being run so fast. Now listen to this. You have to fasten your seatbelts for what I'm about to tell you. That happened May 6th, 1954. By May 6th, 1955, 37 people ran the mile in less than 4 minutes. How? What, they ate Wheaties? What, they have guarana, whatever your great drink is here? I don't even know how to pronounce it, but I love it. But how did that happen? Since Shashi Mabarashis, nobody ran the mile in 4 minutes. Roger Bannister does it in 1954. A year later, 37 people did it. And then the next year, 100 people did it. You know why? Because people thought, hey, if he could do it, I could do it. And that's how you have to look at things. Some people say, I'm going to finish Shas? How can I finish Shas? It's impossible. But then when you hear that in MetLife Stadium, you had 45,000 people, 90,000 people were there, 45,000 people finished Shas with the Shabbos Shas. All of a sudden, hey, wait a second, maybe I could do it. I have a dear friend, Nigel Collins, who just finished Mishnayos, made a whole Seder, a Siyum on Seder of all of Mishnayos. I'm sure 10 years ago, he probably thought it's impossible. He was about tshuva, he probably couldn't even read a Mishnah. But he learned in Halakha Yeshivas, and then he worked on himself, and he became, and he made a Siyum on Mishnayos last Sunday. It's amazing. I want to tell you a story that happened with me. When I was in the ninth grade, grade nine, I was maybe 14 years old, and we had an English teacher. I went to Yeshiva Tervadas. We had an English teacher who taught us English literature. His name was Hyman Ozer. Now, I don't know how it works here in Brazil, but in America, the way it works, once or twice a year, the parents come to speak to the teachers to find out how wonderful or unwonderful their children are. It's called PTA, Parents Teachers Association. So my mother comes to Mr. Ozer, ninth grade, and Mr. Ozer says to my mother, Mrs. Crone, your son is a good writer, but he'll never write a book. Now, my mother was not expecting that I should write a book when I'm in the ninth grade. Now, my mother and I, she was the one who taught me all my writing. And when I was in the early grade, she wrote all my compositions. I got an A, and that's how I got to love writing. I'm a big believer in parents doing homework for children, no matter how, what teachers say, because it makes such a kesha. Now, I'm not saying that they should just sit there and do nothing. You do it together with them, it's wonderful. Can't tell you how many compositions I wrote for my kids, and today they're writing books. But anyway, so my mother says to Mr. Ozer, why do you say my son won't write a book? Nah, he's too religious. Nobody's ever going to read what he writes. I guarantee you that by the time the next parent came in to find out about her child, Mr. Ozer surely forgot what he said. My mother didn't forget. And when my mother came home and told me, I surely didn't forget. 25 years later, when the Maggid Speaks came out, 95 stories that Art Scroll printed, I went looking for Mr. Ozer. I wanted to know if this guy's still living. And sure enough, I found out that he was the head of the English department in a modern Jewish day school. And I called him up. I said, Mr. Ozer, do you remember you taught in Tervadas 25 years ago? Oh, yeah. I had some good years there. I said, my name is Pesach Kron. Do you remember me? He said, I think I remember the name. I said, I want to tell you something. I have a present for you. He said, after 25 years, you have a present? I said, yeah, when can I bring it? He said, oh, if you have a present, you could come tomorrow. Fine. I come to the school. He's sitting behind this big desk. He's the head of the English department. And I show him my book. I said, Mr. Oz, I want to tell you something. I know you're not going to remember this, but in the ninth grade, you told my mother that I would never write a book. I just want to show you. I just wrote a book of 95 short stories, and I'd like to give it to you, and I'm going to autograph it. He went crazy. He comes out of his big desk. He puts his arm around me. He says, come with me. He takes me into one of his classes. He says, boys, I want to show you a former student of mine. He wrote a book, and I taught him how to write. Could you imagine? That's what he told the kids. He taught me how to write. Let him think that he taught me how to write. But what if I, when I was starting to write that book, and I would think to myself, this is crazy. I'm going to write a book. My favorite teacher, Mr. Oza, said, I can't write a book. It's a waste of time. That would have been a catastrophe if Chas V'Shalom I would have listened to him. And the truth is, I've written many, many books, and every single one I still send him. And I autograph it, and he's in Florida. He needs Rafua Shleim already. I don't know if he's 90 already. I don't know. But the point is, you can't listen to anybody. If somebody tells you you can do something, that's great. If they tell you you can't do it, don't listen. If Hashem gave you a talent, you could do anything. You could fly and you could soar if you'll only open the door. I want to tell you about somebody else. A Yid, a Chassidish Yid, a Satmar Chassid from Williamsburg. His name is Herschel Weber. He told me the story himself. See, many, many years ago, he was in a kollel in Williamsburg. It was lunchtime, and he decided to go home for lunch. And he was walking down the stairs of the kollel outside to the street, to the sidewalk. All of a sudden, he sees a man, and the guy said, "Oi, I got a pain!" And he falls to the ground. And he realized the guy obviously had a heart attack. And he runs over to him, and he says, "How could I help you?" And he's trying to help the guy. He's yelling that they should get a doctor, to get an ambulance, get the police, something. And he told me, I stood by this guy. I was trying to give him chizuk, trying to keep him alive. He said, I saw his face turn from white to blue to red, and he dropped dead right in front of me. He said, you know what hurt me most? That 10 minutes later, the police officers came. And I heard one officer say to the other, if we would have got here 5 minutes earlier, we could have saved this guy. He said, you know what I did? I decided I'm going to learn first aid. And me and two other Hasidic fellows, Yerlish Glantz and Herschel Kaff, they both had stores, so they knew that they would be able to go out if there was an emergency. They learned first aid, they learned CPR, and they got a little oxygen tank. And in Williamsburg, from then on, if anyone, there was an emergency, everybody said, get Herschel Weber. He told me a few months later, after everybody knew that he could try to help, you know, with his little oxygen tank, and he knew CPR, and he knew first aid. One night, an 80-year-old woman was sleeping. And when she woke up in the morning, she wanted to talk to her husband, but he wasn't responding. And she pushed him, and he didn't move. She realized, oh my goodness, is he alive? And she realized that he died in his sleep. And she runs to the front window. She's yelling, help, help. I think my husband died. And somebody yells, get Herschel Weber. And they get Herschel Weber. He comes running up with his tank. And he told me, he comes into the room. He saw the guy died 5 hours ago. There's just nothing that he could do. And the woman was crying. She was now an almana, and he was trying to give a chizuk. And finally, the doctors came and he left. Listen to this. When he left and he was going outside, there was a big crowd already outside. He overheard one Yid say to the other, I'm going to say it in Yiddish and I'll translate. He said, Zez dem Yid Herschel etim gehargit. You see, Herschel, he killed him. He was so hurt that somebody would say that. How can anybody say that about another Yid? How can they say it about him? He came 5 hours later. He didn't kill him. He tried to help, but he was not a doctor. And that's what they thought. Maybe that he thought he was a doctor. He was coming early, trying to help, but he couldn't. And you know what happened? He went to the Satmar Rebbe. And he said, Rebbe, I believe that it's time now that we have to build an organization that in case, Chas v'Shalom, there's a medical emergency, people should be able to get help. And the Satmar Rebbe said to him, bring me a Shaar Tshuva. Now all the Talmid Chachamim here, write this down because you will not believe what I'm about to tell you. The Rebbe said, let me show you a Shaar Tshuva. Shaar Tshuva, Shaar Gimel, Ois Ayin Aleph. Third gate, number, paragraph 71. It says like this, V'toy v'nochay ma'oid. It's very good, liyais b'chol ir v'ir. There should be in every city, misnad v'im ba'om, volunteers, minam askilim, intelligent people, liyais nechoynim u'mizumonim. They should be ready, listen to this, l'chol devar hatzolah. The Shaar Tshuva said they should be ready for every case of rescue. The Rebbe said, start the organization and call it Hatzalah. That's how the great organization Hatzalah started. You know why? Because one guy cared. Heschel Weber saw somebody die. What happens if we would see somebody die outside in the street? We would have nightmares. We would talk about it for 3 days. And then we would forget about it and go on with life. That's not what he did. He went to learn first aid. He went to get an oxygen tank. And Hashem said, you're the man. You care, I'm going to give you the reward of all those people that are saved by Hatzalah. One man, he soared. You know why? Because he opened the door. Because he went to the Satmar Rebbe and opened the door. Every one of us can be great. Every one of us has talents. And every one of us can open the door. You can be a teacher, you can be a tutor, you could help children, you could help adults. There's some people that can't get to shul. You know how many mothers, single mothers tell me that their children don't go to shul because there's no men to bring them. The husbands aren't there and they have other kids at home. So they have nobody, the older children, to go to shul. They're not old enough to go alone. Did any man ever think about that? I'm sure there's got to be people, single mothers here that have children that can't get them to shul. You ever think about that? There are many, many people who can't afford some of the meals on Shabbos. You ever think about Tomchei Shabbos? I'm sure you must have it here. And if you don't have it, we should have it. Do they have Tomchei Shabbos here? Should have Tomchei Shabbos. That means organizations that give food to those people who don't have. It's in many, many great Jewish communities. It should be in São Paulo as well. People that pack food, grocers that give food for free or at a cheaper price. So many people get fish for Shabbos, they get grape juice, they get chicken. There are a lot of people out there that don't have what you have. You have to think about it. You could fly and you could soar if you only open the door. Start an organization like that. Start an organization for little children that can't follow the Chumash. Many parents have children in schools, but they're Bali Tshuva, so they can't learn the Gemara. They never learned Gemara as children. You ever think of tutoring them? You ever think of helping them? We each have talent. And that's how you become great. Looking at what you have. Now, I'll tell you two guys who changed so many lives right here in this Beis Medrash. Two public school kids. Public school, that means they didn't even go to yeshiva. Their name is Shimon and Reuven Kol Yaakov. And I'll tell you the story. They live in Queens. They lived in Queens. They're Bukharian boys. They went to public school. No connection to Yiddishkeit. The parents were not religious. And one day there was a Kirov organization, JEP, J-E-P, Jewish Education Program. They come to all the schools and they teach some children Torah. They have permission to take out the kids that are Jewish, and the Catholics do it for their kids, the Protestants do it for their children. But a half hour a week they could teach. So they come to Shimon and Kol Yaakov. They say, you want to hear some Torah? You want to learn about Judaism? He said, nah, we're not interested. He said, no, they're serving pizza. They have hot pizza. Oh, okay, they serve pizza, we'll come. So they came. And whoever the Rebbe was should be benched. The Rebbe taught, whatever he taught or the story that he taught was so interesting that the kids decided they're going to come back next week if they serve pizza again. And sure enough, they came back. And then a few weeks later, they came with a little cassette tape recorder and they started recording what the rabbi was saying. And they started sending it to their friends. And after a few weeks, they decided, why should we do it just to record? Let's video it. And they started videoing what the rabbi did and they started sending it to their friends. And then there was a Shabbaton. Rabbi Wallerstein made a Shabbaton. I was there. And these two brothers, Shimon and Reuven, Kol Yaakov, they come over to me. They say, Rabbi Krohn, would you mind? We know that you speak a lot. Could we video you and we'll send it out? I said, of course. They said, you know, because people say we want to start an organization and people say we're never going to be able to do it. I said, it's ridiculous. Of course you could do it. The Chofetz Chaim Heritage Foundation does it. Every Tisha B'Av, they have 10, 20,000 people that hear their videos. Why can't you do it? They said, you really think we could do it? I said, of course. And they started an organization called TorahAnytime.com. TorahAnytime.com last year taught 12 million hours of Torah around the world. You know how many people this past Shabbos came over to me? We see you on Daily Dose. We see you on Torah Anytime. Two public school kids. You know what that means? These kids cared. And if they cared and look what they did and how they changed the world, we can all do it. Every single one of us. And you know something? You know how you do it? By hanging around good people. By hanging around positive people. People who will encourage you. Not people who drink Macallan and beef jerkies and all this kind of chazarai and go to kiddush clubs on Shabbos. I don't know if you have it here in Brazil. I hope you don't. In America, they have kiddush clubs right before Musaf. Guys go out after landing and they drink. It's a bazillion. It's a disgrace when parents drink like that in front of children. Why do you think kids have drinking problems? Because they see it from the parents. You can't be like that. You have to be a role model. You have to be a role model. And you could never, ever be worried about failing. Rav Nosson Sherman once wrote in a book that Oswald printed about Bar Mitzvah, failure is not the enemy of success. It's the prerequisite. Great people were not born. They were made. They made themselves great through desire and effort and by failing, but learning from their failures and refusing to submit to them. None of us are perfect. None of us can do everything perfect the first time. Don't ever be afraid to fail. You have talent. Hashem has given you the talent. Take that talent and bring out the best that you can bring out. And that's all that Hashem wants. That's what Arichas Yomim is all about. When we come now to Rosh Hashanah, Aseres Yemei Tshuva and Yom Kippur, and we want to have life, Chaim Shel Shalom, Chaim Shel Tova, Chaim Shel Brocha, we want to have all Zochreinu L'Chaim. What kind of life? We have to have a life of Arichas Yomim. Then Hashem could give us Arichas Shonim. But Arichas Yomim, take the talent that you have. I don't want to embarrass somebody, but I have a friend here, Mr. Faberis, who's been writing for years. I know him for years. He's been sending me Torah. He's a young man. He's not a Rosh Hashiva, but he's learning Torah and he's sending out Torah to thousands of people. That's how I got to know him. That was the first time that I ever heard anybody in Brazil learning Torah. So many years ago. Many, many great people in this room tonight. Take the talent that you have and don't ever give it up. So I want to review everything that we said and we'll end with a story that will change your life. Let's remember, we're here in Elul, Echad La'Oila V'Echad L'Chatas. Those of us that have had a wonderful year, that's great. Let's go Oila, let's be even higher. Those of us who had a year of difficulty, L'Chatas, this is the time to elevate. Let's remember that the world was created with a hay. No matter how low you fell, you could always come back. Always. That's what hay is all about. That's why Avram got a hay. Sarai got a hay. It's the letter of tshuva. It's the bracha of tshuva. Hashiveinu begins with a hay and ends with a hay. 5 and 5 is 10. That's the Aseres Yemei Tshuva. Let's remember what the Zohar tells us. Yes, shishim ribu oises la Torah. We each have a letter in the Torah. If there's one yid out there that hasn't fulfilled his tafkid, it's our responsibility. There's no overlap because we're each important, but we can't do it alone. There's not one word in the Torah that's only one word, one letter. We need each other. Let's remember, the day you were born, that was the day that Hashem decided the world can't exist without you. Every one of you is important, and every one of you can accomplish. Let's remember what the Sfasemes, what his grandson said, his father, his grandfather didn't have Arichas Shonim, but he had Arichas Yomim. How do you have Arichas Yomim? As we said on Shabbos, you do two things. You do a chesed every day, keep a notebook, like Rabbi Behar is doing, and then learn something every day. Do a chesed every day, that's what the Chofetz Chaim says, and then learn Torah every day. That's how you have Arichas Yomim. Let's remember the beautiful story of Yaakov Chweki, who gave of his talent free to a couple that needed it. That's how you bring out your best, and that's what Hashem wants from us. Let's remember Herschel Weber, how he cared and he learned first aid and CPR. Only why? Because he saw a person die and Hashem gave him the schus of starting Hatzalah. Let's remember those two public school boys, Reuven and Shimon Koyakov, who have affected thousands all around the world. And let's remember never, ever to worry about failing, because that's all part of growing up. I just want to end with this fabulous, fabulous story. A number of years ago in Lakewood, they decided that they are going to close the elementary schools, the Chadorim, 3 days before Pesach, so that the Rebbes would be able to help the wives, because Pesach is a very, very busy time. Fine. They didn't close the Bate Medrash, but they closed the young schools so the Rebbes could go and help the wives. Now it's 3 days before Yontif, and a fifth grade Rebbe comes into the house by his wife, and he says, you know, we don't have school, so I should be able to help you. How could I help you? So the wife says, you really want to help? He says, yeah. She says, look, Baruch Hashem, we have six kids. If you could get the six kids out of the house for 4 hours, I'll be able to do anything. I'll be able to bake and cook and clean. Just get them out of the house for 4 hours. And he's thinking, like, what in the world am I going to do with these kids in Lakewood for 4 hours? But then he remembers that there's an airport an hour away from Lakewood. It's called Newark Airport. And he figures, look, these kids have never been to an airport. If I take them from the airport, it's an hour there, hour back. You know, maybe. And then he remembers that in Newark Airport, there's an air train. Now, I don't know if you know this. I don't know if they have it here in Brazil. But the airports in the world are monstrous, mamish. They're so big. Heathrow is like a city. It's unbelievable. So the airports are very, very big. And in Newark Airport, they have a train that goes from one terminal to the other. For example, let's say you land in Delta, but you got to get to United or you got to get to American Airlines. So you can't walk. It's too far. So what you do is you get on a train. There's no charge. And you go on the train and it goes from terminal to terminal. So this father figured, these kids, they've never been on an air train. And the air train goes all around the whole airport. They can see planes taking off and landing. And there's the Jersey Turnpike there. They see the cars. It's a machaya. So he goes on the air train. There's no charge. And he's on the train with the kids for 2 hours. And the kids are having a great time. After 2 hours, a pilot gets on the train. Pilot looks very neat. He's got an outfit. A shirt, a tie, spiffy, cap, very nice. Now, most of the pilots are very, very nice guys. And he sees a father with six kids. He goes over to the kids. He says, where are you all flying today? They didn't know what to say. They're not flying anyplace. So they look at the father. And the father says to the pilot, actually, sir, we're flying nowhere. He says, nowhere? He says, you see, we're religious Jews, and we have a holiday that's very busy, and it's very busy for the wives. So my wife asked me if I could take the kids out so she could bake and cook and clean. So we're here on the air train, and we're having a great time together. And the pilot gets very serious. And he says, young man, I want to tell you something. He said, I've been a pilot for 25 years. There's not a major airport in the world that I haven't landed in. He said, 2 years ago, I got a text from my son. And he wrote me, Dad, you're always so busy. You never came to any of my birthday parties. You didn't even come to my graduation. And last week was the birthday of your first grandson, my son, and you didn't even have the decency to show up. Do me a favor. Take my number out of your contacts. And 2 weeks later, I got the same text from my daughter. He said, young man, I have flown everywhere, but obviously gone nowhere. You told me you're flying nowhere, but with your kids, you're going everywhere. And that's what the main thing that we have to remember. Our children are the future of Klal Yisrael. Our children are the future. If we want to go everywhere, make sure that the children grow and love Yiddishkeit. Come to that young minyan that we davened that Friday night. You see davening, learning, interest in Torah. A young people, that's the future of Klal Yisrael. It's your children. When you're lying on your deathbed, you're not going to say, oh, I should have made another commission. I should have sold another building. You're going to say, why didn't I spend more time with my children? That's the future of Klal Yisrael. That's how you go everywhere. With children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren. People ask me, how do you do what you do? 2 weeks ago, you were in Gibraltar in Spain. Last week, you were in Eretz Yisrael. Now you're in Brazil. Next week, you're going to England. How do you do all this stuff? You know what the answer is? My kids are married. You got to be crazy to do this kind of stuff if your kids are home. A father belongs at home at night. And if you want to learn, you learn part-time in the Beis Medrash, but you learn at home so the kids see that you're learning. A father has to be home for supper with the kids. Don't tell me Klal Yisrael. Your children, that's the future. And when they get older, then you'll worry about Klal Yisrael. Of course, we all have to do for Klal Yisrael. There's no question about it. But there's a limit. It's your children. That's really what it's all about. That's what everywhere is all about. Hashem should bless every single one of us. We're in the final days of Elul. Echad la'oila ve'echad la'chatas. Everybody knows what they have to improve. I don't have to tell you. Your heart knows. Your heart knows you got talent. Don't be lazy. Take that talent. See how you could give it out to others. Be the best that you could be. And just remember, you can fly and you can soar if you just only open the door. Hashem should bless all of us. The biggest bracha that I could give anyone is that you should be able to fulfill your potential. Each one of us has potential. Don't worry about being like anybody else. Be the best that you could be. That's how we'll have Arichas Yomim. And that's all that Hashem wants from us. Let us all be Zoicha at Arichas Yomim, Arichas Shonim, if Hashem will give it to us. And we should have a Gesunt Yar, a Gebench Yar, Yeshua Yisrael Nechamais. Shlomo, thank you so much for inviting me. And thank you all for listening.